This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dane Peterson. Dane's the president and the chief operating officer at Emory Healthcare. We're going to talk to Dane about resilience today, burnout, resilience, the workforce in these COVID-19 times, and a lot more about priorities and leadership and so forth. Dane, before we get started, can I ask you to take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure, thank you. Yeah, my name is Dane Peterson, and I get the pleasure to serve as the president and chief operating officer for Emory Healthcare. I've been with Emory for almost 13 years in this role for just a few months. Before that was chief operating officer. And just really appreciate the opportunity, Scott, to speak with you and share some things that are going on here in Atlanta.
Thank you. And let's talk right about resilience and burnout, and I'll just frame this issue very quickly, then ask you to take off on it, is, you know, with new surges in COVID-19, the nation's healthcare workforce seems about as anxious and burnt out as can be while giving great effort to protecting the rest of us. So in a very difficult position, because they are sort of our best defense against COVID, is our workforce does amazing things for us. But yet we're hitting them more than they ever expected. They're like an army, you know, someone who signed up to be in the army and never expected to be deployed. Now they're being deployed over and over again. So talk to us about what you're seeing in terms of resilience, burnout, and what we could do to help our healthcare workforce get through this period of time.
Yeah, no, thanks, Scott. I agree with you on all points. You know, healthcare workers are known to be selfless individuals. Dedicate their lives caring for others, putting their own health at the back burner oftentimes. You know, putting others ahead of self is really a definition of a healthcare worker. And as you said, this has been more true in the last 9 months than ever during this global pandemic. And, you know, it's as much stress at work as also at home. And so we have to make sure that we're really reaching our employees and our providers, you know, where they are. Within this continuum of whether you call it burnout or resilience and stress, as we work with the teams more effectively. I think that the key aspect of this and how we're trying to deal with it at Emory Healthcare is looking at this as a two-sided coin. There's one side for sure where healthcare workers need to find ways to take care of themselves more effectively so that they can work with their patients and their teams more effectively, right? So, you know, self-support. But then there's also a requirement, at least our feeling, there's a requirement for the healthcare system to come alongside each individual and team to figure out ways to reduce the stress of the workplace. And so, you know, it's not just the idea of self-care, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, get more rest. There's that. That's important. That's very important. Self-support is very important. But the idea of the organization coming alongside and using things here at Emory, we call it Empower, our lean operating journey, you know, working with the staff to reduce the waste in their area, working with the staff where we're engaging them on process improvements to reduce the stress in the workplace is equally important as doing things like, you know, working on mindfulness and connection and eating healthy and getting enough rest and finding time to play, which we've also done. We've done both. But I think organizations may do a disservice if they only focus on one aspect. Thinking both in terms of self-support as well as organizational support is key.
And talk about that for a moment, because when you first see organizations roll out wellness and anti-burnout type things, it almost strikes me as very perkish and pedestrian versus deeper and holistic. So, for example, when you see organizations roll out and say, we're going to give free massages to people, in the old days it was going to do, we're going to do beer pong at 3:30, it seems quite silly versus deep and holistic. Talk about Emory's thoughts on this and the deeper commitment to sort of how do you deal with resilience in the workforce? How do you give them space? How do you let them have time and grow and stay okay and stay centered?
Yeah, thank you for that. And I agree with you. I think one of the key aspects is making sure that leaders engage with the staff as we create these opportunities for improvement. So it's not very important for me to have an idea. it's really important for me to talk with the staff, have the staff give ideas about what is really going to be impactful for them, and then helping to implement those ideas. So, for example, I agree with you. I think the idea of, you know, yoga at 3 o'clock, while that may be really important for some, it may fall short of many. And we need to make a sure, make a way to find that we raise all boats. You know, folks that are in difficult times, finding resources to help them, folks that are just having a normal tough day, you know, maybe some of the mindfulness and centeredness aspects can be, you know, worthwhile. So what I would say is this: we're attacking it, you know, kind of from like a Maslow's hierarchy perspective. So, you know, self-support, starting with, you know, physiological. So we've added literally hundreds of contract clinical staff over the last 5 months to be in a situation to be ready for the next spike in COVID, but also during times when we don't have spikes in COVID, to make sure that we have enough people to give people time away from the workspace. So, you know,
well, and talk about that. Talk about that commitment for a moment, because people can talk about all they want about wellness and gear their staff, but if not hiring enough bodies, enough people to give staff space and some time off to recoup, you can't really accomplish anything. Like I think, like when we talk about the American health system and 330 million people, we could do all the different things we want to do, but if we don't have enough nurses and doctors, it's all sort of a very uphill climb without solving the real problem. And I'm very impressed that you've made this clear commitment. Part of solving this, it's not nice things. It's truly giving people space by having enough staff that there's capacity so people can take their time off. I mean, that's as important as anything, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I think, and those clinical staff members that come from the, you know, the contract labor pool, you know, they integrate very quickly with the team. They're full team members that the other team members can rely on. And so they can take time away knowing that their patients are in safe hands. And I agree with you. I think organizations, that's why the resilience and the burnout needs to be a partnership, I think, between the healthcare systems and the staff themselves to make sure that each part of the organization is doing everything they can to improve wellness.
And talk about your career. You've got this fascinating career. You're a Stanford Business School graduate, which means, you know, it's not being a Harvard Business School graduate, but still very, very impressive. No, I'm just kidding. You're also at one point in your life an auto engineer, a product engineer for Ford Motor Company.
Yes.
What was the pivotal moment in your career, or where was the time that led you into healthcare and made this your calling?
Yeah, no, thanks, Scott. You know, for me, it was that first semester at grad school at Stanford. And so what they said is, now this is after 10 years. So I worked in automotive engineering for 10 years, the last 5 with Ford, and really wanted to grow within leadership. And so, you know, went to Stanford for an MBA. And what they said is a lot of folks use their MBA to make a career change. I had never really thought about that, to be honest with you. And so I looked at it and said, well, what do I like to do? What do I love to do? And what I loved about my automotive engineering job was working with the frontline staff to do process improvement, to make their job easier, because I saw the fruits of that labor, where if a job is easy to do, it gets done well with less stress. And so I thought, well, where else could I do that? And not very many people in my family were healthcare members, but I thought that working with mission-driven folks, the nurses, the physicians, the other clinicians that are caring for patients, that potentially, you know, an engineer with some business background may be able to help support those frontline workers. And then when you think about the product or service that we're providing, you know, working with patients and their families to provide health, or being there at a time when that's very difficult, I just felt that was going to be a better place for me over my next 30 years of my career.
And take a moment. Some people don't give the role credit enough. You've served in the role of chief operating officer, and anybody that works with real organizations knows that the chief operating officer, sort of like the managing partner of an organization, is the person that often is in charge of making sure everything works, that the ships, their trains all run on time, everything moves in the right direction, that everything keeps on track while you're pursuing the leadership vision of the board and so forth. And I recognize that now you serve as president and COO, but talk for the moment about the role of the COO, and when you see COOs doing the role well, what they're doing. How do you sort of envision that role, and what do you see when people are doing that role well?
Sure. Well, I think it first starts with team, and I understand there's a chief operating officer, but her or his team is really the key driver of the organization in my estimation. Now, the chief operating role, needs, to your point, needs to be that point of intersection, the point of being able to bring the right resources to bear, to be able to look at data and talk to people and connect dots that maybe some parts of the organization, in different areas, whether it's geography or physician group versus hospital group or the shared service areas, maybe they don't see every data point at the system level. And so, no, the chief operating officer certainly needs to work with her or his team to connect those dots, create the right priorities. And I think the key aspect is also to find the key leverage points. What few actions can we take to actually drive the majority of metrics? Because healthcare is too hard to try to lift everything at the same time. I think it's impossible to do. And so, but you got to be able to work with your team to find the key leverage points that actually, this level of energy actually creates 2, 3, 4x results for patients and their families or the employees. I think the other thing, really, really quick, Scott, sorry for the pause, but I think the other aspect of a chief operating officer that she or he needs to, I'll say, revel in the complexity of the system, meaning they have to love it. If you don't like complex things, don't be a chief operating officer for a healthcare system. You've got to really enjoy the complexity and understand that there actually are leverage points if you find them. And so that, to me, is the other aspect. Is you got to love the operation side. Otherwise, it won't be very much fun.
Fantastic. And take a moment, Dane, because Emory Healthcare, magnificent institution, really an impressive academic medical center and institution. Tell people a little bit about Emory Healthcare, because not everybody's as familiar with Emory Healthcare as maybe they should be, given how highly ranked a system, what a great system it is. Can you tell people a little bit about Emory and maybe a few points of pride in Emory?
Oh, sure. So Emory Healthcare is the clinical arm of our Woodruff Health Sciences Center at Emory University. That includes the School of Medicine, School of Public Health, School of Nursing, the Winship Cancer Institute, and the Yerkes Primate Research Institute. So we're the clinical arm of a very impressive health sciences within the university. The other unique aspect of Emory Healthcare, I think, is working with the rest of the schools, is we're the only academic center within a city like Atlanta, right? So other big cities like Chicago and New York and Boston have multiple academic health systems to share the load. Atlanta doesn't. And so Emory really is that place of hope for Atlanta and greater Georgia, for those care processes that just, get done better or at least more often at an academic center than some of the better community centers across the states. And so I think, but the points of pride for Emory are pretty long, but I'll try to go fast. Our Winship Cancer Institute is the only NCI comprehensive cancer institute in the state of Georgia. It sees, thousands of patients annually that just would not receive the type of care that an NCI program delivers had not Emory made the investments in cancer over the past 15 years. Our heart and vascular program, Hurst and Logue wrote the book back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And so the heart and vascular program Emory is deeply respected. And the last clinical program, although there's many others, is our infectious disease program. And I think today with COVID going, I wanted to share that. And I think we have a very special and unique opportunity, Emory, to be so close to the CDC. It's literally on the same road that I'm sitting on right now. And so we have arguably as good of an infectious disease faculty group that there is in the world. And we owe that with the proximity to the CDC, but also just the investments that Emory has made over time. And so we're extraordinarily proud of our ID group, and honestly couldn't be more thankful during a time of a global pandemic to have that kind of depth of talent right here at Emory. Has been truly unique and very powerful for us.
And Dane, I'd love to touch base on one more subject, and I promise I'll only give you a couple more minutes.
Sure.
The question of sort of leadership and developing competence in an organization, you're an executive that's stayed there for 14 years or so, or very close to it. So many young executives today have the perspective of there's more flipping that's going on. There's more switching role to role. There's more moving place to place. And talk about the strength of organizations that are able to retain leadership and grow with leadership. And obviously, you've got to keep on improving your team. It means constantly bringing in outside talent, too. But this mix of talent in organizations, the importance of some longevity in tenure in organizations.
Yeah, I think it's really important to create the environment where people know that they can learn and grow within their roles, as well as the opportunity to move within the system. And so we have examples where we've had key executives or key senior leaders within our physician group move over and are now the chief operating officer of one of our hospitals. And so there's an opportunity to move within Emory. The nice thing for someone like me, so I joined Emory as a chief operating officer for one of our hospitals, but I knew that I didn't think I was going to outgrow Emory, meaning that I would find opportunities to lead and grow within an academic healthcare system that where I wouldn't need to look outside for opportunities. I've been very fortunate, and many of our longstanding leaders have done the exact same thing, where we had one of our key nurse leaders at our university hospital moved to be the CNO at one of our community facilities, Emory Johns Creek, and now she is the chief executive officer of that hospital. And so we have lots of examples where people that as they've grown, they've seen opportunities to grow here at Emory.
But this is a fascinating perspective, and I don't often think of it like the way you just thought of it. Is you want to hire motivated, smart, good people that want to be leaders, and then make sure the organization is healthy and robust enough that there's lots of room for those leaders to grow. Because you have to have got to be enough hospitals, enough places, enough roles, enough leadership roles to keep on attracting great leaders and having places to funnel them into them to grow into and so forth. So, I mean, that's part of the equation, isn't it?
Oh, it definitely is. And that's where we're fortunate within, being the academic center in a city like Atlanta that's growing. We have those opportunities to grow. I will say though, you have to be ready. You have to be ready for folks that have an itch to grow someplace else, and just know and celebrate that. So, having one of our leaders move to a competing organization or across the country, it's a sense of loss, but it's also a sense of celebration that person gets to impact the lives of patients and their teams somewhere else, and that we had a role to play in their leadership development. And so you have to celebrate the folks that leave and celebrate the folks that stay and create enough opportunities that more stay than leave.
And one more on this point, celebrating those that leave, and this is hard for leaders and organizations. Sometimes when leaders leave, somebody as the leader sees as a reflection of themselves that, oh my God, they didn't like me. They didn't like it here. I'm doing something wrong. And so sometimes there's this concept of that person's dead to us now. We never want to talk to them again. And I overstate that, of course, for just the language sometimes you use in business, wrongfully so. But the reality is you need to celebrate those people as alums of the Emory healthcare system and recognize that you've got to be building organically a team and constantly recruiting great people laterally too. So you're going to have people that do fall out of the system. And as you grow, you have lots of leadership spots to fill too. And it's a constant back and forth between the number of leadership spots to fill and the number of emerging leaders you have. I mean, it's constantly a balance.
That's exactly right. And listen, healthcare is way too small of an industry to actively burn bridges. right? Just don't do it. Be, you know, whether you're the organization or the leader, you know, celebrate folks that have invested themselves and found great opportunities. And if you do that, you'll always do it right.
Right. Dane, I want to thank you for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. What a great pleasure to hear about what you're doing on resilience and burnout. I can't stress enough your point on hiring enough bodies, hiring enough people, no matter what it costs. And it's hard at a time when procedure volume's down to do that. But that commitment to take some of the load off people is probably as big a commitment as almost anybody can do culturally and business-wise to sort of lessen the sense of burnout is my perception. And I want to thank you for sharing that with us. And just thank you for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast today.
Well, thank you, Scott. And thank you for all you're doing.